This week's show with Alexandrina Dordea is made possible by the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. And now here's a word from EGA President Lee Peacock.
Hi, this is Lee Peacock, President of the Embroiderers Guild of America. And I would like to invite you to our first ever sampler retreat. Sampler University, or Sampler U, is being hosted in conjunction with the EGA National Seminar and will be held in Dallas, November 15th and 16th. It's two full days of classes with popular teachers Sylvia Stecker of Running with Needle and Threads and Becky Nolan of Lucy Beam. There will be two full kits valued at $300. Lunch will be served on both days. Bespoke swag celebrating Sampler U will be given to all the participants. Registration is real time, so you will know immediately if you and your friends are able to attend. No waiting or wondering if you made the class. There will be access to shopping opportunity and exhibits. Plus, it's in Dallas, which is easily accessible from all parts of the country. And it's open to all EGA members as well as non-members. So how do you find out about this wonderful opportunity? Simply go to egausa.org and look for Sampler U. Register soon and join us in Dallas.
Thank you, Lee, and thanks to the EGA for their continued support. If you're not a member, consider joining today. Now, our conversation with Alexandrina Dordea. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Romania, Alexandrina Dordea. Alexandrina, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. I first encountered you on Instagram, and your current efforts are all insects, and they are absolutely amazing. We'll talk about those in a little bit. But in researching you, one of the turning points that you said in your career was meeting an artist in Nepal who exposed you to punch needle. But what really caught my eye was he uses kerosene to transfer the. How does that work?
It's quite interesting. They use the same technique, like I think prick. Technique for transfer.
Yeah.
When you brick holes into the design. So they found, I'm not sure why they use kerosene, but it evaporates. So they mix it with spices or any coloring, like food coloring, from what I was told. And he showed me how he will transfer that using it's like a baking paper. So it's quite slippery on one side, and they'll use multiple times using kerosene, and the color will remain on the fabric, but the kerosene will evaporate in a few hours or even in a day. So it's just the color will remain, and then you can trace it over it. And I never tried it. It just was fascinating for me how they do the transfer.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
And kerosene stinks. I mean, that stuff really smells, so it's such a weird thing to use. Yeah. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, alcohol would be a better choice, I would think, but whatever. Yeah.
I did try alcohol. It does work great.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think. And you don't have the smell. Yeah. So this guy in Nepal, he was doing punch needle?
I don't remember much. It was so, I stayed there like 20 minutes. I saw it was like, they have temples, a lot of temples in there. And he was on the side trying to sell hoops and the punch needles. They were like handmade punch needles. And he will show around like how he works with them or whether he was interested. It's very, was very random, very unexpected. It happened very fast. So it was just a moment like, and it was really got me into, wow, I want to see what is this. And from there, it's kind of, I tried and see how it's evolving. Yeah. But it never stick to me, the punch needle. I didn't really get to do it.
I tried it once. Actually, I gave it a good hard try. And no, I'll pass. Yeah, no. So your background is graphic arts. Is that like you, as in I went to school for a graphic arts degree?
No, I actually started university doing telecommunication. Oh. So it's more like technology and stuff. But I never finished. I did like 3 years, then I followed my husband to Malaysia. So when I was, before my son was born, I started taking like long distance degree in graphic, in interior design, because I felt like I really like this part. And then I did some architectural drawings for a year. I was thinking to apply to architecture, but it wasn't meant to be. It weren't. And I ended up doing web design, graphic design. It's really because I had like hand in drawing and it's really get along with that.
Yeah. So the drawing comes naturally to you?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those people. Yeah. I don't have that.
Okay.
I don't have that. I can do stick figures. That's all I can do. Yeah. Yeah. So how does needlework, I mean, you got the guy in Nepal got you all energized, but how does needlework come into your life? Is it early on? Did you have exposure to it?
Yes and no, I guess. I really liked working with my hands since I remember. So I always did either crocheting or knitting, but at the very beginner level, I didn't know much how to do. But then I really started doing more and more embroidery when my husband joined a grappling gym, jiu-jitsu, and he asked me to do a fish on the back of his kimono. And it was like, oh, what is it? It's fine. I'll try it. And I did. And that was first one. Then from there, it's just more and more teammates wanted. So I did like 10 or 14 during a few years. A lot of embroidery on a kimono and on the back. So it started from there, and then it evolved from there. It was like the starting point with the needle, working with the needle.
Yeah. So all the kimonos are all custom decorated.
Yes.
Wow. Fancy.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So was that straight embroidery?
Yeah, I will also sometimes, because I didn't exactly, most of the time they knew what they wanted. So I just draw on the kimono just with a needle and a thread, mostly DMC or whatever I could find at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the way people get started, it fascinates me. Yeah. So then you said, wait a minute, I can do art with this and actually get creative. And did you dig in? Or, I mean, you're raising a child, so, you know, that takes up a little bit of time. Did you, is that what really got you going? And you said, wait a minute, let me get some cloth and thread and see what I can do.
It's quite interesting because it took place over such a long period of time. It didn't happen like very fast, very, so it's here friend, there friend. And one time I was waiting for my son, and a parent saw me stitching and she asked, oh, can you do this for me? So it's kind of started from these small challenges. Can I do this? Can I do for her or for somebody else something? So the first painting I did, it actually was a request of a friend. And it took me 2 years, but I learned so much doing it, and I make so many mistakes in that painting if I look back now. But it was like a great experience to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that doing stuff for other people like that. Oh man, I do not enjoy that. It's because you're always under that little bit of pressure to make it just right, and no. So you basically you had a bunch of people asking you. You learned because people asked you to do needlework for them. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's one way to do it. Yeah. Yeah. Now, when I was researching you, I mean, I made a list of techniques. So straight embroidery, stump work, gold work, timbre, punch needle, and beadwork. I mean, you do so many, but timbre is really your base technique, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It really fascinated me when the first time I saw an Indian sari, and it was handmade because we lived in Malaysia. They have a lot of traditional embroidery involving beads, not just from Indian side, but their own local traditional. And it really fascinated me, and I wanted to know how they do it. And I got a crochet hook, the smallest I could get, and I just tried on everything I could find until I figured it out. And that stayed with me for a very long time, and I used, I got really crafty with it, because normally tambour, they don't use thick like canvas fabric, they don't go through many fabrics, so I just tried so many variations to see how it works, what it's going to work on. I break a few needles, I break a few fabrics and stuff. So but I really enjoy doing it. I find it very relaxing, and it's a joy for me.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because in interviewing people, the timbre comes up in the fashion industry, embellishing clothing, because it's so fast and versatile. And for someone to use it as their main technique for embroidery art is rather unusual. I mean, the people that do it in fashion carry it on into their embroidery art. But you taught yourself how to do that then?
Yes. Yeah, wow. I did.
Wow. Yeah, because just watching your videos, you're obviously proficient at it. Do you find that it's the versatility in your art that it gives you that is why you use it so much?
Not necessarily. I think it started from the curiosity, and because I really, really wanted to know how it works. And I just discovered that it can do so many things with it, not just in fashion. And
it gives you the basic shape and stitching that you want, and then you can build off of that then.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all, sometimes it's not so much the main technique, it's there, but then you can upgrade by using different threads, different materials, different and it's so many ways you can use it. You can use different stitches, like stem stitch, you can create with it, you can do filling stitch, you can, and it's getting more and more interesting. It's quite, have a quite vast use. If you can use it for a lot of things, like to express when you look for texture or for fluidity.
Yeah.
It's,
well, I have to say, I watched several of your videos very closely to try and learn the technique, because it's fascinating technique, because it is so fast. And you just have that needle and the thread goes down through the needle, right?
Yes, yeah. Not through the needle. It's when you pull with a hook, it's like a crochet hook actually, and you pull the thread from underneath, you create a loop like a chain stitch, and then through that loop, you bring next another loop and then next another loop. So it's worked like a stitching machine, like a,
sewing machine.
Loop is at the loop. Exactly, for chain stitch. So if you pull it, it's going to unfold. It's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, that comes together for me because one of the things I do is refurbish antique sewing machines, old Singer sewing machines. And so then I, of course, get involved in the history of sewing machines. And those early sewing machines, they were all done with chain stitch. So that must have come off of the tambour technique then, I would guess.
Sure.
that's something for me to look up now, because the early sewing machines were chain stitch, because that, and the drawback was if once you pull that thread, it all comes out.
Yeah.
And then the big development was when they were able to get a bobbin and interlock the top and the bottom thread so it wouldn't come out. Oh, now you've taught me something. Okay. Now I got to go do some research and see if the sewing machine, the originals, came from the tambour technique. Wow. Okay. Excellent.
It's quite interesting. Most tambour, it's mostly known for couture things, but it's very, very old. It says that it's first time it was used in shoes, to repair shoes, because you also use a hook to pull the thread. Mm-hmm. And it's like a crochet thing. So it's have so many, it's much more older than it's known for.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Well, I was watching the video where you're showing beading on the line work on your ant piece. And you were pulling the bead up and then putting beads on the tambour needle.
Yeah.
And feeding that. It was so fast because beading is so tedious otherwise. It's just one bead at a time. And you were putting down two beads at a time. You were going quite fast. That was, it's like, give me that. I'll take that. I'll bead all day long with that. Yeah. Yeah. So then how do you get doing art? How do you start doing art? I mean, you just decide one day, let me give this a try and see what I can make. Did you have a design in mind, or did you just start playing around to see what shapes you could get?
It's actually in the same way. It started with the embroidery. So I have a friend who really wanted like an octopus, and he wanted a painting of the octopus. He didn't really know what. And I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And I did. And I didn't know how to frame, even by today. When I think about the frame I did for that painting, it terrifies me. But I think you have a choice to reframe it if you can. But it's from there, it's kind of started. So what I can do next? Because I don't see myself going on the path of fashion. I hope you're saying it correctly. I don't know why. It doesn't really... I did try even with the jackets. I did some embroidery of my jackets, but it still comes back to painting somehow.
Uh-huh.
And I said I... Because sometimes the path is very unclear in which direction to go. There are so many. And I decided that, yeah, I think if I always came back to the same thing, I'd rather just stop and develop and research and continue to grow in this direction rather than just going in all and not knowing what to do with it. So yeah. I just start developing from there, and I think just new things, new ideas, a lot of failed projects because they know that they still sit in the pocket somewhere in the box.
That's how you learn. Yeah, I think one thing that people are always afraid to. So many people are afraid to fail, and you just gotta be willing to give it a shot. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You learn something from it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So all of these techniques that you use to build your pieces, have you taught yourself all of them, or have you taken instruction?
No, I did taught all of it myself.
That's why
there's so many failed of them. It's because of that, not because it's my path. Even today, I like to experiment a lot, and it's not always successful. So a lot of times I need to cut out the layers and build it back at all, because I like to take risks in that direction. So sometimes it's rewarding the most.
Well, I mean, that's impressive, because you're in a minority in terms of people who are willing to just experiment and learn that way. That's really terrific, because I think ultimately you're better off for it, because you've learned how not to do it, and you probably discover some things that you can do that taking a class you'd never get to, I would think.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were your first things? You do a lot of nature stuff. Did you do more abstract stuff initially, or did you do flowers and those kinds of things? I mean, there's one lily piece that you have that's kind of stump work and timbre. And when did you start getting formal with it?
I think after we came back from Malaysia, I had a bit more freedom of how do I want to put it everything together. So I decided I will work on making something more
artistic?
Something in one direction that okay. can not so diverse. And I had with the Beatles that was one direction to go, but a lot of times I look into symbolism, okay. and I'll build on that. And so the Beatles and the flower, they have a meaning for me, and from there it kind of start getting more and more. All the projects were done either for someone it has like a deeper meaning for me, or the other person I made it for. So okay. yeah. I'm not sure. I think I rolled from one side to another.
I follow you. Currently now you're doing a ton of insects, and that's what really caught my eye when I found you on Instagram. Was your insects are absolutely amazing. And what triggered that? Was the Beatles?
Actually, no. I started with the dragon.
That dragon. Holy smokes.
Dragon.
Yeah. Wow.
And the dragon was made for my niece. She was born in October, so it was made for her. And then that was the moment when I was taking a break, and I really didn't worry. I really was sure what I'm going to do next. So I just asked the internet, what do they want to see? And a lot of responses were all kinds of insects, all kinds of, and I say, okay, I'll give it a try. And once I tried, I discovered that I can learn something from this. So I say, okay, I'm going to take a year of doing this so I can see all the possibilities I can cover with it. And that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Well, you're getting amazing. You're getting amazing texture using all those techniques. And it's interesting, because some of your, like the cicada and the ghost moth. Is it a moth? Yeah. Yes. There's more of an art to that, where some of your others are more true to life, if you will, and more accurate. And it seems like you go back and forth. Your ants, those red ants that are all decorated up with beads and stuff, is last thing I would have thought to put on ants. But really interesting. So what gets you going on an insect? Is it a shape or potential color, Or do you just see an insect and see a vision for what it could be?
It's a mixture of things. Sometimes it's a shape. Sometimes if I see an insect and I say, wow, I can do something with it. And then it takes like weeks in my mind. It always sits in there and develops until it's actually get on the paper. So sometimes it can be the color. Sometimes I have a material in mind and I really want to try it and see how it works. So I'll find an insect just for that purpose.
Oh. Uh-huh.
To try and see how it works and how it doesn't work or what it's, for example, I did petting for a long time, but with insects, I found out that some pieces just don't bind together well in petting. So you need to kind of adjust, need to change. So I'm with each one of them, I have learned something that it wouldn't occur to me in otherwise. So with all the beads, I really like to get creative with it, and it's sometimes more simple. It's just the way I discover how things work, not necessarily because I couldn't develop it into something else. It's sometimes it's about the design. Sometimes it's about the materials. It's all different. What I want to learn in that specific project.
Yeah. Yeah.
By doing it.
And you do use a lot of padding. It's one thing that makes your insects so nice is the nice rounded bodies. Has that been a lot of experimenting with padding to learn how to get that right? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's actually what I'm doing so much of it right now, because until now I was not having like a clear that I just most of the time you either do one kind of embroidery and you're very good at it. So the padding, even though I used it a few times, it's something like undiscovered for me. Mm-hmm. So just to do it 3-4 times, it wasn't enough for me to fully understand what it can do. And with every insects are so different in so many ways, even though they kind of they have the same structure and stuff, but it have a very offers very large possibility of what you can do with the padding and what type of padding. And I like to try it all to see how it can what can be done with it.
I think that's about insects is you're exactly right. They have the head, thorax, and abdomen. Say you know, three parts and the legs and all that, but every one is so different within that that you can't get bored because there's so many of them. But then when you get close, there's so many colors in those in insects. People don't see all the colors. You talk about beetles and the sheen on their carapace is the colors there are just amazing and. To bring that out with thread has got to be a fun challenge.
It is. And it's when I first started doing the mantis, I actually was afraid of it. So it was even a bigger challenge because I needed to. And then I started researching about it and seeing more pictures of it. It's kind of calmed me down.
Yeah.
Much.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, that mantis. Well, every one of them, I've really enjoyed them. So take me through the process. You decide on an insect either because of the materials you want to try or you want to try the insect. Then is it a bunch of research, a bunch of photos to get different angles? How do you go about actually getting the design you're going to stitch?
I draw a lot. I do look a lot of pictures and photo. I like micro images which show the details and all these tiny teeny details of how they look like, and that is the base of the inspiration for design mostly. And after that, I just find an insect I really like, and I start drawing it again and again. Sometimes it could be a successful from 2 or 3 drawings. Sometimes I have to go for 10, and then it doesn't come out. And it's quite a tedious process to get to the end design. And after I start stitching, it changes because what I had in mind sometimes
let me back you up on that. So during the various drawings, then, is your mind churning in terms of how you would stitch each area? Is that part of what's going on there?
Yes. If I have in mind, for example, either I want to try a material, like either bead or thread or something I have, or I want to try a specific technique on the, because it's sitting at the back of my mind. So I'll work with the technique on the design, like I'll leave specific spaces for that technique or specific spaces for the beading when I draw. So I will take in consideration all these small details, what can fit, whether they can fit together or not.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So then you finally get to a drawing that you want to stitch, and then it's transfer it to cloth and...
After that, a lot of times the design changes during this process because even if I calculate everything when I got to stitching, a few millimeters there, a few millimeters here, and the beading don't fit, so I change. And it does. Sometimes I realize that the padding I did doesn't work with this one. So it completely, I needed to fuse few designs together to make the back or to make. So it changes together with the work. It doesn't stay as I designed it at the beginning.
So when you start stitching, does that evolve too in terms of, you have a plan when you start stitching, but then things get shifted as you go along? Or once you start stitching, are you pretty locked in on what you're going to do?
Never, actually. Never. I like to trust my gut on this a bit, because once I saw the padding, I think about the thread. Once I'm done with the laying, the covering, the padding, then I see I can do the border here, I can do the gold work here, or I can do... So it's, for me, it's like a lot of time it's like how I feel or how I envision it to be. And if it doesn't come up to that, I either take a few days break until I figure it out. So it's not something stable,
yeah.
I'll say.
Yeah. Does that tell me then that you have... insect projects that are sitting off to the side waiting for the right thing to come to you? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So it's bug land all over your room then. All right. Got it. Yeah. Now, currently though, insects are the thing that you're doing, but you don't plant. That's not a long-term thing, right?
No, it's not. I will switch. I think this at the end of the year, I'm going to put to sale all the insects, and I'll start clean again with a different project, because I have a lot of things I want to explore, and not just embroidery wise. Like I'm not sure what I'm going to do next year, but I'm sure it's not going to be insects, and I'm still putting it together. So I don't know yet. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So you're a typical artist. There's always one more thing down the road to do then. Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's all right. Yep. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Yeah. So now you had a picture of what, 3 insects that you had professionally framed. And oh boy, that was absolutely stunning. And I loved your comment about how you need to leave some things to the professionals, and the framing is one of them. So,
yes.
Yeah, that was a beautiful piece, yeah.
Yes, that was a beautiful piece, but I get so many from biologists who actually work with insects. They said, those are not insects, they have 8 legs, and insects don't have 8 legs, and 2 of them do. And I can't fix it anymore. But it was like, I never thought of that while doing those beetles, because one of them has six and the other two has eight. But it was kind of constructed. I had in mind, I don't know, to fit the areas or to cover the specific. And I completely got out of the don't exactly look like that. But it's fine. Yeah,
tell the insectologist or entomologist, tell them it's art. Just leave me alone. It's art.
It's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things when you do things, animals like that, is there's always going to be an expert who to tell you, no, it's not that way. Yeah. Whatever. It's art. Leave me alone. Yeah. Now the ants, the red ants, holy smokes, those things, they look like they're dressed up to go to a party.
Yeah.
Well, how did that come to be? I mean, you really fixed those guys up. That's great.
I don't know how I come to make ants. I'm not sure what led to the ants project, but it was so hard because they're so tiny and the padding was so thick. So it was, until I finished the covering the padding, it was nightmare for my fingers.
Yeah.
But it's, I cannot remember how I started them.
Yeah,
what led to the project?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Now, when you get those finished, it looks to me like they have some weight to them, like there's some heft to them.
Yeah.
Just because there's so much material in them, so you also have to address that. I'm sure the framer was struggling a bit with that to get them to not sag in the frame.
Actually, not really, because I like to use canvas, like when I stretch my fabric, it's so stable. I can put a mug of coffee on it and it won't slow in. So when I finish the work, I'll take it out. It's going to be all straight. It's rarely happens. I pay a lot of attention to framing and that. So, and because I know it's going to affect the way I'm going to take it out of the frame.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I try to take care of it before it becomes a problem.
Okay.
That way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved your slate frame setup with the two kitchen, end table things and the frame in the middle. That's brilliant. Brilliant way to go. So Tell about how that came about. You just found a couple of kitchen cabinet things and.
Yes. I really, really wanted like a professional frame,
mm-hmm.
but it costs so much to ship here, because you buy the frame, but then the cost of shipping, it's like almost as a cost of the frame. So it doesn't have any storage, and I have quite a small space here. So I figured it out. It's for me, it's nice, but it's not worth it because I keep everything around me. So I was looking for an alternative, and I did found they're very small, and like very small. They're like 8 centimeters and 40 centimeters, and like they fit perfectly. I can put any frame between them too, and I have so much like storage for everything. All my beads, everything is in here. And I'm happy because even if I get like a professional frame, I already have the stable surface to put it on.
Right, right.
So
yeah.
That's the next step for me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because I've yet to really stitch on a slate frame, though I have three of them here, one loaded and the other two not set up. But I've often thought having a formal trestle would be really nice to have. But then your setup, where you have the frame between these two pieces of furniture, and then all the drawers. I mean, you don't have to reach very far at all to get whatever material you need. It's really actually ideal for that kind of a thing. And then as you use different size slate frames, you just move them in and out to hold it.
Yes.
There. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have all my beads on the window, so it's everything within the reach. And it's very convenient.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent setup. And I love the way you have it right in front of a window. So during the day, you have plenty of daylight to help see. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you, how does all of this work raising a child too? Are you, when your son goes to bed, you stitch, or are you able, is he in school that you can stitch during the day?
When I started, I didn't have much time for that. So I'll stitch randomly when I have time, but now he's 12, so okay. He's quite big. He has homework, has school. So in the time I can work on the embroidery and yes, what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's not, yeah. It doesn't interfere that much anymore. Since he's bigger. Yeah.
Can take care of himself. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. It does.
Now your designs, a number of them are on your Etsy shop. So we have PDF downloads, and that's full instructions for how to execute these various designs.
Yes. I didn't exactly, a lot of people ask for classes, but I found that maybe instruction is something in between, because classes is a bit difficult to set up, especially if you need the equipment, you need all kind of, you need the curriculum to put together. That's it. Something I'm still working on for leading to a class, like a live class. So like instructions are the middle ground for those who actually want to try it, but don't yet know if they want to do it or don't want to do it. So it's, but they do provide, it's most of them are not for beginners. I have just the only one instruction that is meant for beginners, like with more detailed how to put everything with more picture, but most of them are from intermediate to advanced. So because there's so many steps to take, and it's not something a beginner will be able to follow.
Yeah. Up.
So it's, yeah.
So, okay. So that's interesting, because I know for a lot of designers, writing instructions is just, ugh. You know, just, ugh. They just want to stitch. They don't want to write instructions. So you have, what is it, the sun drops or dew drops? What is the one that's the beginner level one, the flower?
I think it's a snowdrop.
Snowdrop. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But then, yeah, the rest of them, you even mark them intermediate to advanced, and clearly they are. I mean, if you look at them, you need to have some experience to execute those things. So are your instructions just some basic guidance, or do you go into a lot of detail on, or how do you handle that?
I do go, even for intermediate advanced, I do go in a lot of detail, especially when it comes to embellishment, to padding, and to covering the padding. I don't go into the detail how to frame a fabric, because that's something basic. So I consider that in the beginning, this is like something an intermediate should be able to do. So I don't go in these kind of details, like, for example, what embroidery needle to choose. This is up to the person who does it. So I do put, like, all my instruction have in between 25 and 30 pages, and it's all written. I draw all the illustrations for them. I draw graphics because I'm in there, and kind of easy for me to. So I do all step by step with everything that's needed to complete the project. The only thing I don't do, I don't show how to frame the finished piece, and I don't show how to frame the fabric, and I give a basic guidance how to transfer the design. I give you options they can choose, or they can look up for it if they don't know. And most of the people who does a bit of embroidery, they already know their own way to do these things. So.
Right.
It's easier for them just to adapt what they know, and it's easier to go from there.
Most people, when it comes to transferring a design, they have their way, and they're not interested in your way. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all of your insects eventually will end up on the Etsy site, and then you have some of your other designs. There was that fan, kind of an abstract fan thing. That's absolutely beautiful.
I'm not sure. I'm still thinking because, as you said, the doing the instruction, it's totally different world. So if I work a month on the embroidery, I work another month and a half on the instructions. So
right.
I'm too behind. So I'm not sure how I'll handle it, but I'm trying to put what I can. If I skip some, I think it's okay because
No, that's understandable. Yeah, I have yet to talk to a designer yet who said, "Boy, I can't wait to the instructions. I love writing instructions." No, never. No. What a thing that I'm always curious about is when I talk to various people who live in Europe, is getting materials, because here in the States, generally, we don't have any trouble getting materials. So that ebbs and flows, but in general, we're able to get a lot and get more things than you guys can get. With the variety of things that you use, are you able to get the materials you need, or do you have to stock up a lot?
In Romania, it's very hard to get materials I need for what I do. So every time I go somewhere and I see a shop, I see something, I'll get it. Yeah. Because I know I cannot find it otherwise. So I do stock up on some things I know I use a lot. So that's the thing, like bullion wires, because I need to order them from India. So I normally will get like at least 100 grams of each, because it's something I cannot get the often. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, I have so many leftover things from, because I brought everything when we moved back from Malaysia, every beads I have stocked there, everything brought back, because they have so many of them there.
Yeah,
I don't have this. So I have a bit of everything. So I try to reuse everything I have. And it's kind of a problem for instruction, though, because I don't remember the sizes or the name of the beads. So I need to find the to find them, to look up for them.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, no, it just interests me because depending on where you are in the world, certain things are readily accessible and other things are really hard to get. And then I'm sure that ebbs and flows with laws and shipping and regulations and all kinds of things. And so you're playing that game too. So you always have to be aware of what supplies you have does that, when you say you have an insect you want to do and you know how you want to do it, is the first question, do I have the materials, or does that get set aside because it's going to take so long to get material?
A lot of times I use the material I have. So I will adapt the design to what I have, because for me, it's not always possible to get the materials I need or I want. So I literally use everything I have under hand. So I'll adapt, I will use old materials, I'll use literally everything I have and play with it around to get what I want from it.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. I even color sometimes my own silk. Like I have a bunch of silk, white one I get. So if I need a specific color, I just color the whole thing so I can I can get the shade I need and stuff. Yeah. It's because it's not, sometimes it's very hard to on that part to get exactly what you envision.
Yeah. We are so spoiled here. Oh, I tell you. No, I mean, I say that however I said it, but it really is true that we are spoiled in that we can pretty much order whatever we want and have it within a couple, 3 days. And like I said, people in Europe that I've talked to and other parts of the world, it's not nearly as easy. And then you always have that shipping cost and the taxes that make everything so expensive that... So when you travel, do you come back with suitcases full of stuff? Is that,
I do.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't blame you. Yeah. Yeah. Nice trip, but look at all the material I got. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the next insect? You got another insect in the works, or are you getting ready to move on to the next thing? Well, you still got better part of a year to go, so.
Yes, I'm working right now on a tarantula hawk wasp.
Oh.
It's beautiful insects, so that's going on right now. And then, Elsie, I have a few options I really want to do, and one of them, it's a grasshopper, and it's another, it's a butterfly. But we'll see which one comes first.
Yeah, yeah.
After this, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Alexandrina, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it. Your work is beautiful. Really, really enjoyed. Well, I've studied it quite a bit. Yeah, the videos are great. So, folks, the best place to probably, well, Facebook, YouTube, but Instagram is where I found her. And you can just have a great time doing that. So thanks so much. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Thank you very much for having me.